When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the ESPN Footy Podcast.
G'day guys, welcome back to Red Time for another Thursday. It might only be round two, but there is still plenty on the agenda for us this week. I'm your host, Jared Barker, and I'm joined as always by ESPN's Jake Michaels. Jake, welcome.
Good to be back. Another rep, how are you enjoying these shows?
Going well. Episode 3. It's going pretty quickly. It'll be episode 20 in no time. One episode per week, obviously, but you're on twice. You're on the Tuesday episode as well. And I did notice, although I wasn't in the studio then, Jake, I do need to bring up to you now, I did hear something. I don't know if every listener heard it, but I heard a loud bang and I'm assuming you might have dropped something. Just make sure you don't do that today, all right?
Well, we were talking about clangers with Christian Jolly from Champion Data. And yes, I think I made a clanger of my own. I had my water bottle at my foot and accidentally knocked it over. So it's miles away today. It will not be happening again. I can promise you that. Apologies for...
Careful of that glass next to your arm too, please. We are going to get stuck straight into it, guys. Plenty on the agenda, as I said. We're going to start with the reigning grand finalists, both of them 0-2. That's the first time in VFL, AFL history that that's actually happened in the opening fortnight.
That's crazy, so, isn't it?
It's an insane stat, and that's why my first question for you is Collingwood or Brisbane? I mean, who is likely, more likely, to turn their season around from this spot?
Well, I want to say, can I say both? Is that an answer that you'll accept? Both of them?
No.
If that's the case, then I have to pick one and only one's going to turn it around. I think it's probably more likely to be Brisbane. Now, I don't want anything to get misconstrued here. I really think they both can turn it around. Like you said, 0-2.
Yep.
It's not 0-4, 0-5. You know, it's not catastrophic just yet. I think they both can. But as I said, if only one will, it's Brisbane. And I think there's a few reasons. I think the recruit of Tom Duday is so important.
Yep.
He will come back soon. He will shore up that defense. He will help out enormously. Lachie Neale missed the last game. Obviously, we know how good he is. He's not just your average midfielder that's missing a game. He's co-captain, Brownlow medalist. He is a star that needs to be playing week in, week out for the Lions to be their best. And then there's Will Ashcroft as well. Yet another talented player in the midfield. Give them the more depth that they need. But I think the biggest thing with Brisbane as to why I think they can turn it around, or maybe not so much why they can turn around, but what does hold them in good stead compared to Collingwood, for example. Let's say both clubs have dropped 30% this year. It's just going to be both 30% production has dropped off. Brisbane still have that home ground advantage. Now, there's 10, I believe it's 10 more games to go at the Gabba this year during this home and away season.
Yep.
Even if they're 30% worse this year, how many would you say they are still likely to win? 7 or 8?
Without looking at who they're playing at that venue, it's 7 or 8 at least.
So you can give them 7 or 8 wins there. Plus, they're getting some more on the road.
Yep.
They're still going to be around the finals mark. Whereas Collingwood probably wouldn't have that luxury if they'd have that same level of drop-off. Now, with that said, as I said at the top, I think they can both turn it around. I don't think it's got to a dire or catastrophic point just yet. I think they're both, as we saw last year, throughout the year, and obviously through finals as well, they are the two best teams in football. You know, I think the Giants probably now have an argument to be made that they are alongside. Some may say they've gone ahead. But I think, and I said it last week after Collingwood's opening round loss, and I'm saying the same sort of thing after the round one loss, although, there is a little bit more concern now because we're starting to see a bit more of the sample.
Yep.
Stick fat with both these sides. They will be able to turn it around.
Yeah, and the tough teams they've played, I mean, look, the Giants and the Swans are the two teams that the Pies have played, and they're the two...
They're great teams.
Fancied teams, the premiership favourites at the moment, and the Blues, I think, will be top four this year, and... look, the Lions were favoured against the Dockers, obviously, but Freo over there is the
only one that's a real shock. I mean, I think everyone, I tipped Collingwood twice and Brisbane twice, so I'm 0-4 on those two teams, as a lot of people probably are. But I think the only one that really surprised out of those four losses was the loss to the Dockers.
I'm the same as you. And you made up a good point with Tom Duday and Will Ashcroft coming in the second half of the year is going to help them a lot. And obviously the games at the Gabba. I think you just need to look at being able to just qualify for the finals and just win enough games to qualify. I'd be leaning more towards Brisbane as well. They've both got pretty tough fixtures.
But that's the nature of where you finish.
Being in the grand final, and we spoke about Collingwood's tough start. They finished the year with Sydney, Carlton, Melbourne and Brisbane as their last four games. So that's a brutal finish as well. And the Lions are in the same boat. But as you said, I think just the Gabba home ground, the players to come
does
in,
help. Yep.
I'd be leaning towards them if you force me to make a choice.
And with all that said, Collingwood playing tonight. So depending on when you're listening, they could be 0-3. And the Lions with the bye next week, it's Brisbane Collingwood at the Gabba, 0-3 playing 0-2. I mean, it's one of the more unexpected, but one of the most fascinating grand final replays in AFL, VFL history would be. So, stay tuned for that one. Hey, here's a juicy one for you. I'm very interested to see what you say about
this. What do you got for me?
Should the Eagles have delisted Andrew Gaff at the end of last season?
That is a juicy question.
You like it?
I'm going to say no, they shouldn't have. But I can see the argument on both sides. So, I say no. I just think that
you thought that his four disposal effort was worthy of having him stick around play? You got nothing out of him?
No, I think the four disposal effort warrants him being dropped this week, which is obviously Adam Simpson has come out and said that's what's going to happen. He'll be sent back to the Waffle. But the reality is he's been at this club for a long time. I know he's dropped out of form, and it's actually really sad to see a player of his ilk coming from where he's come from and doing what he's done at the Eagles starting to play like this. It's really sad, but I don't know what value he could have had to another team. I don't know if another team came knocking last year. We know North were after him really heavily in, I think it was 2018, he was out of contract and they offered him a mega deal. He knocked that back. But I don't know if any other clubs were seeking him, if a premiership contender would have made use of him this season. I think the reality is he was out of form the last couple of years. And it's just the trajectory is all downhill for him. But he's gone down as the Eagles have gone down as well. We're talking about a guy who made the All-Australian team twice. He's a best and fairest winner. He's played 276 games. I'd love to see him play 300 games. He missed the premiership in 2018 as well due to that suspension that hit on Andrew Brayshaw. I think, as I said, it's tough to see this happening to him. But the value that a young team and an evolving squad like West Coast can get from having his experience and leadership around the club, I think, is actually really important. So I think it's a good thing that he stayed there. He's out of contract at the end of this year as well. So to me, it all just makes sense.
Look, I think we can call a spade a spade. Andrew Gaff is not a good football player anymore.
Once upon a time, the best wingman in the competition.
But once upon a time is not now. And that's the problem. That's the reality. He's not a good football player anymore. He's not an elite wingman. He's not even an average wingman anymore. He's a poor footy player. And that's what we're seeing the last 12 or 18 months, and that's culminated in this abysmal four disposal effort and being dropped.
Do you think he still has a role to play at all this year on the field?
I don't think so.
Is he going to get back into the team this
year?
Would you be surprised if he doesn't play another game this year?
He's obviously going to play more games this year. I don't think he's getting to 300. He's certainly not getting to 300 with West Coast. And to go back to the initial question about whether or not he should have been delisted, look, West Coast couldn't delist him. They pay him too much money. I mean, he's reported to be on around $800,000 a year. Now, if that figure is accurate or anywhere close to that, he has to be the most overpaid player in the league for the production that you're getting out of him. And it's not a shot at him, but that's just the reality of the situation now and where he is in his career. He's 31. He'll turn 32 later this year. His disposal numbers have dropped 27 a couple of years ago to 24 to 20 to now. Well, at the moment, he's averaging four. Yep. So, as I said, he's not a good footy player anymore. He's not quick. He was never a player that was able to win a lot of contested ball. But you don't need that from everybody. His ability was... What made him so valuable was... he's been able to win it on the outside. Well, he's not doing that anymore at the moment as well. I don't think he will remain at the Eagles beyond this year. And I don't think there's a club out there that will look at him and say, we're a soon-to-be 33-year-old Andrew Gaff away from contending for a flag or winning a flag. I don't think there is a club out there that would want him.
It seems like the hunger isn't there for him anymore, but I do hope that he does turn it around. It'd be great to see him hit 300, but... it seems like it's a step too far just with the way that he's playing so far. Jake, was the right decision made on James Sicily?
It was.
They overturned his ban, obviously.
Well, that was the wrong decision. But the right decision was initially made by giving Sicily a one-week suspension for the kick. And we spoke about this on Tuesday. I wrote about it in my 6 points column yesterday on Wednesday on ESPN. And I've said this numerous times now. James Sicily is one of my favorite football players to watch. He has been for a long time. I love his ability to read the play. He's such a clever player on the field. But he does these things. And we spoke about it, kind of like Toby Green. Same
little
type of player.
Brain
fades. And that white line fever where you're just not quite sure what's going to happen next. And that was the third time. I know he will be able to play now because it's been downgraded to a fine. But the third time since he's been made captain at the start of last year, he's been suspended. That is far too much.
It's happening, for a captain of the club.
It's happening way too much. And it's just not good enough. I think the decision was correct to give him a one-week suspension. We don't want to see these acts in the game. I know people will say, "Oh, that's soft. Oh, you haven't played the game and you don't understand what it's like." Yeah, well, we don't kick in the game. We don't kick opposition players, especially in those situations. So, no, he was right to get the one-week suspension. And the AFL, once again, hasn't been strong enough and basically hasn't set an example, hasn't set a precedent. And this goes back to what I said about George Hewitt and Lachie Neale in opening round.
Yep.
They should have made the example. They should have suspended, if not both, certainly George Hewitt for punching Neale. And they didn't. Mm. And this just continues to be a theme with the AFL and how these incidents are assessed. And I just think they continue to get it wrong.
I'm pretty 50-50 with it because I get the action over outcome sort of thing. And I mean, kicking another player, clear, there's no place for that in our game. But I mean, let's not pretend like he full-blown belted someone with his foot. This is a little love tap as a player's falling and he's leaning back. It's not that malicious. So I understand the action part of it. No kicking in the game. It's illegal. And cop your whack, get the ban. But
so how hard does he have to kick him for everyone to say, "Oh my goodness, he has to be suspended 5 weeks"?
I'm just saying.
What are you talking about? Kicking him in the head? The whole idea of you should not be kicking an opponent. Don't kick him.
No, absolutely. And I get that. I get that side of it. I'm just saying that there's still a part of the game where there's no place for it, but you still need to take the outcome and the level of force into consideration. And did you see Zach Butters' bump on Jeremy McGovern on the weekend? So that was a good hip and shoulder bump, a really, I wouldn't say vicious, it was a hard and fair bump, but the only reason why he's not suspended is because he didn't get McGovern high. But as an action, that could cause a concussion. It could really warrant a 4 week plus suspension for the same act, but it's because of the outcome that he's not suspended. And we think that's fair. So I still think that I'm still pretty 50-50 with it. I would have liked to see the one game ban be upheld just because obviously kicking has no place in our game. But the reality is he still was sanctioned. It was downgraded to a fine. So it's not like the AFL saying, yeah, it's okay to kick people.
But a fine for these players, yeah, we just spoke about Andrew Gaff on maybe 800,000. A fine for these players?
Well, you know, I know.
A small fine? Yeah. It doesn't deter anything. We still see this stuff happening. We still see players getting into scraps with each other. We see fines every week coming through. But the suspension is what will stamp out this behaviour.
It was a dumb act, and I wouldn't have been against him getting 1 week for that, for sure. Yep.
Another one I think you'll like. What in the AFL do we need fixing the most?
I saw this question on the run sheet, and I was licking my lips, Jack. I've banged on about this.
I don't know where you're going.
Such a long time. Matt Walsh knows what I'm talking about. And people who I talk footy with knows what I'm talking about. But this is the dumbest rule in the AFL, and by a long way, that's insufficient intent.
Right, okay.
We need to abolish it or go back to deliberate. And they're the only two options. It has no use in our game anymore, insufficient intent. And why fans are so incensed by this every single game is because they treat it like it's deliberate. It's not deliberate anymore. So the umpires are actually using a different set of guidelines.
Yep.
To interpret.
But fans will still interchange that word deliberate.
Deliberate,
because
yeah.
Because I don't
it's different
think
to
it's
insufficient
understood.
Intent. Yeah. Yeah, correct. I think that's a part of the anger. But there's way too much ambiguity with the way that the umpires are coming to these decisions.
Yeah.
And it's being paid way too often. And because it's being paid so often, every single game you see it, very frequently, the only solution, I think, is to bring in a last touch rule. Because I think we're actually already there.
So that is not completely a completely foreign rule.
No, see that in the Sandful.
Yeah.
And in somewhat in the AFLW as well. They do it a little bit differently. But I think it works really well in the Sandful. And there's just way too many benefits for this not to be in the league. If a player's clearing the D50, kicks it to a contest on the wing, and the ball bounces at right angles, trickles quickly out of bounds, and it gets paid insufficient intent, why aren't we just going with the last touch rule? It's the same thing anyway. And you know what? Fans are going to be less angry because they'll understand the rule. They'll be less.
Fans
trust
are always
me,
going to be angry.
They will absolutely be less angry. It's less confusing for the umpires. It's just whoever touched it last, free kick against. So there's no ambiguity. There's no more interpretations.
Yep.
And it'll free up the game. So no more throw-ins on the boundary line. Less congestions on the wing. Frees up the game. A faster game. That's what the AFL wants. I just think there's way too many benefits for this not to already be in the AFL.
Look, I think you touched on it. It's the interpretation of this rule, which is the biggest frustration for fans, and it is for me as well, because I think a lot of the time we see these free kicks paid for kicks that end up, as you say, bouncing at right angles and trickling over the line.
Yep.
And we think, well, that's not what this rule was introduced for at all.
Mm.
So I think that's where the AFL and the umpiring has to be better. I don't necessarily think we need a rule overhaul and introducing. Not to say that this is a bad option.
I think we do. But it's a crap rule.
But I think it's... I don't think it is.
Yes, it is.
I think it works, but you're saying it doesn't...
It's being paid so frequently.
That's the problem. It's the interpretation of it which is wrong. If the interpretation was correct and it was actually paid when it should be paid, you wouldn't have a problem with it. The reason we have a problem with it is because they're paying ones that we think, how the hell is that a free kick?
And it's that ambiguity that I talk about, which is part of the issue with the rule, but you don't get that with the last touch rule. It becomes so much clearer for everyone, and the umpire's jobs just become so much easier. The fans not as angry, and as I said, quickens up the game. I'm fully in favour of a last touch rule. I think insufficient intent needs to go immediately.
I think for me, the biggest change I would like to see, and it's something we just touched on a few moments ago, and something I've said quite a few times already this year. It's everything from the tribunal, player sanctions, penalties as a whole. I think the league can do so much more and can be so much better with how it actually treats and handles these incidents in these cases. We don't know what to expect. You're talking about that with the rule. We don't know what to expect with this anymore. It's unpredictable. It's confusing. We have gone down this trap over the last X amount of years of just looking at the outcome and ignoring the action. And I think it's totally wrong. We need to go back and revert back to how it really should be. It's the action which is what we need to penalise. Yep. And that's why I didn't have any issue with Sicily getting the week initially.
Yep.
And it's why I was frustrated that Hewitt wasn't given a week.
The Hewitt one is the big one for me, though, not the Sicily one. I mean, he punched someone. I don't care if it got him in the arm. He punched someone.
Yeah.
And that's an act that you cannot have in the game.
Absolutely not. Yet, despite that, there's still people out there that tell me you don't know what it's like playing the game. Yeah, because you're playing the game at local level where these guys play, where there's 40 people watching. This crap happens because they see it in the AFL and they don't do anything about it at the AFL. And that's the problem. And it trickles down to these lower leagues. You got to stamp it out at the top. And I've been saying this for years. And that, to me, has been my biggest frustration with the league for at least half a dozen years now.
Yep. A few issues in the game, absolutely. Now, two of probably the best, well, arguably the two best players on Port Adelaide's list, and I guess, well, they're emerging as one of the best midfield duos in the competition now, I think it's fair to say. That's Zach Butters and Connor Rozee. I'm just interested to know, who do you think is going to have a better career out of those two players?
You know, I've answered thousands of questions on this podcast over the years, and I don't know if there's one I've answered that's harder than this.
It's difficult.
It is an extremely difficult question to answer, and to be truthful, I don't really know the answer. If I have to pick, probably go Rozee. Couple of reasons. He's already got the runs on the board. If they both retired right this moment, you'd say Rosie had a better career. So he's by that logic, he's in front.
Yep.
He's ahead of him right now. He's got two All-Australians. He came in and we all had that debate initially about, was it Rosie or Walsh? Did Carlton take the wrong player? I think Sydney Stack was in that conversation as well. So it feels like a lifetime ago. But he came in and had an immediate impact. He was a goal-kicking half-forward, great player, great skills.
Yep.
And it was that immediate impact that I think people love. Butters took a little longer, but obviously last year he was exceptional. But I think the reason why I would go with Rosie over Butters is because he's captain now.
Yeah, which shows the club trusts him a lot more in that leadership
side. It's not that I don't necessarily think that they trust him more than Butters, but they obviously see him as a long-term captain. They value what he does. And he will be long-term. He's not going to be a captain for 4 years and then say, all right, I'm going to step away and someone else can take it.
Contracted until 2032.
Yeah, he is going to be a captain for a decade. And interestingly, just a sidebar to that, you would think Butters will never captain that side. Connor, unless it's hard to see a situation arising where Zach Butters captains
that side.
Although
I don't think that sort of matters when it comes to who has a better career.
No, but when you start talking about success, and if Port go through a period of success, which is quite possible with the way the list is looking, Rosie is captain. If their level of production is exactly the same, Rosie will get more credit as captain. That's just what we do.
Yep.
He'll be the one holding up the trophies. He'll be the one doing more of the press conferences. It'll be Rosie that gets more of the credit. And I think that in time, we'll look back and say, he's the premiership captain. You know, we did the Mount Rushmores here a few months ago with all the teams. And you're looking at some names and it's like, well, this guy's got to get on because he was a premiership captain.
Yeah.
This other player may have been, a couple of percent better, but the premiership captain outweighed him. And I think that's where he has the chance, or probably the advantage, I guess, heading into the next sort of 10 years. But very, very tough question to answer.
I'm always in favour of the skill and the ability side of things. So I'm with Rosie as well. And I liken this comparison to a different one that people seemed to love to make over the last half decade, which was Joel Selwood and Scott Pendlebury. A lot of people said who's a better player, who had a better career. And
so you're saying Butters is saying that Selwood and Rosie is Pendlebury?
In this case, yes. Not that they're a like-for-like type of player, but in terms of a comparison with, I wouldn't be surprised if Butters becomes more accomplished in the way of a Brownlow medal or something like that. I mean, he had 27 votes last year, which was more than Rosie. But Joel Selwood, more premierships, more accomplished perhaps, but Pendlebury, better skill, probably a better footballer overall in terms of what he's able to do on the field.
Yep.
And I think that's the same with Butters. Rosie's more that class on the outside and that skill, and I always side with that sort of player. So I think I'm firmly with you there on Connor Rosie. But I think we can both agree Port Adelaide are very lucky to have these guys on their books at the moment.
The Bulldogs started slowly, lost their first game against the D's. I wrote in 6 points as well this week that they're just not a very good side. I mentioned that on Tuesday. I don't think we need to overreact too much. I think we've been overrating them for quite a while. But I guess it begs the question about Marcus Bontempelli. He remains one of the best players in the competition. Are the Dogs wasting his prime? And that's what he's in right now.
No. And I think you talk about overreactions. I think that is an overreaction because they've played one game of footy in 2024. I think that's the reality,
but that's
right?
That's what we do. We overreact.
No, I understand that, but they played Melbourne, who are probably going to be pretty good again this season, and they were coming off a game under their belt, first hit out for the Dogs, so not as prepared for it, I guess. But that's if you want to make an excuse for them. It's one game. I still expect them to make finals this year. So to say that they're wasting Bond's prime. Did St Kilda waste Nick Riewoldt's prime by not winning a flag while he was there? I mean, you could say this about anyone, right? So, no, they're not wasting his prime. I would say they're utilising his prime. They won a flag in 16. Obviously, that wasn't prime years for him, but they've played finals consistently over the last half decade or six years or so and made a grand final in 2021. And a lot of that comes down to Marcus Bontempelli. So they're not necessarily wasting his prime, I think. Look, it's going to probably come down to do they make finals this year or not. And as I said, one game into it, I'd like more of a sample size. I still think they're going to be there in September, to be honest with you. So I can't say that they're wasting his prime, no.
I tend to agree. I think 2.5 years ago, they played in a grand final. 2.5 years ago, they led a grand final.
Yep.
To say that they're wasting his prime, well, as you said, Only one team wins the flag every year. 17 don't, and so we're saying that everybody else is, they've just wasted the season.
I think, is Bevo wasting a talented list is a different question.
It's definitely a different question. But what else, right this moment, what else can they do to, I guess, to sort of remove that question entirely, to, so people wouldn't even look at it that way? We raised the possibility of Aaron Norton going back and switching things around in the forward line. But I just, I think when you take a wider view, he is a phenomenal player, right? That has won a premiership and come very close a couple of years ago, as we said. Would we say that the Lions are wasting Lachie Neale's prime? No.
But by the same premise you would, but that's what I mean, no.
But of course not.
You can't.
Would we say Melbourne's wasting Christian Petrarca's prime? I know that they won that game then, but that, as I said, that's a half, that's a quarter. That game turned in 5 minutes, that 5 minute period. So it's so much of an overreaction. You can't, no matter how good you are, you can only do so much. And I think it's very unfair to say that the Bulldogs are wasting wasting Bond's prime. And yeah, I just don't think they are.
Yeah, I'm fairly with you. I think the Dogs will be fine this season. Wasting someone's prime to potentially wasting someone's time. Did the Dockers, did their win in round one against Brisbane prove that it was the right decision to extend Justin Longmuir's contract by 1 year?
I don't think it proved it. I guess proving something is sort of showing that there's still no doubt. Is it a step in the right direction? Yeah, it is, because they needed to. They needed to start well after the way last season sort of panned out. And he entered the year, I think, quite comfortably the most under pressure coach in the league. Well, he was the only coach before the extension that wasn't signed beyond the year. So there was pressure on him. There was a huge amount of pressure on him. Now, would I have done it? Would I have given him the 1 year extension? Probably not. I tend to lean towards no extension and see how things pan out, or a longer term deal.
You're harsh though.
But I just don't see what the 1 year does. The one year
it relieves a 12 months
barely,
worth of pressure.
Barely.
Because
the club still isn't convinced. If the club was convinced he gets a longer deal, the club isn't convinced. It's just buying time to see how this year works. He's in no position to turn it down. What's he going to do? Turn it? Of course he's going to sign it. If he turns it down and they start 0-4, he could be gone. So of course he's going to sign the deal, but it just doesn't show me, or doesn't tell me, the club is confident going forward. And are we going to be surprised if, you know, because they got North Melbourne this week. They'll be 2-0 most likely. Everyone will say, yep,
they have their injury troubles, so who knows if they will win this week.
But then it's Adelaide, Carlton and Port over the next three. So they're three tough games, and you probably don't expect them to win any of those.
Yep.
So the season starts to turn again. I am not convinced he is the man to lead them forward. And if they don't make finals this year, there's absolutely no way he will be there at the end of next year.
I think if the footy department supports him and the board tick it all off, well, then I think we have to just sit here and say, yeah, well, they obviously back him in and think he's the right man, even though it's only a one-year extension. They made a semi-final in 2022. Obviously, they only won 10 wins last year and they fell off.
Since.
It's really, it's a similar list.
I think 10 wins almost overrates what they were last
potentially.
Year.
Potentially.
I don't think they weren't even close.
It was a drop-off, especially with the game style. It was a stark drop-off for sure. But look, it's pretty much the same list without being identical.
Yeah.
Same sort of players.
And I think it's worth pointing out that he is, right this moment, Justin Longmuir's coaching record is 42-42.
Yeah,
horrific.
It seems right. It seems right though.
Yeah, it's 50. It's a 50-50. Win one, lose one. But where does that get you?
I think they'll be fine this year. I'm not bullish on them, but I would expect them to be better than a lot of people would suspect. I think they're going to be in the finals mix for a lot of the year.
I just don't agree at all.
I think they will be. I think they're better than people think. I don't think they're going to play finals.
No, they're not
shock me
playing.
Out of the world
they're not
if
playing
they, if they
finals.
Did make it, but.
They're not playing finals.
I'm very happy with having that extra 12 months for Justin.
What are you
reading? I don't know.
You want to double up on this hate? You're big on Freo, aren't you?
I'm not big on them.
No, they're not going to be anywhere near finals. And
I think they'll be around the mix. With a few weeks to go, they'll still be in the hunt mathematically for finals.
Yeah.
And I think that extending Justin Longmuir, just releasing that pressure for a little bit, at least for 12 months, is the right move, just to give him time to get the list right. And now with all these injuries this year, I mean, it's probably proved to be the right decision, hasn't it?
Well, I don't think it's proved that, but I think if it
ends up that they get close to finals, McDonald, misses a chunk of the season, Brennan Cox.
It's a massive if, though. You're saying it like it's happened or it's definitely going to happen.
I don't
think they're going to be anywhere near finals this
year. I think they'll be around the mix.
If they can be ninth if they can end up finishing ninth and battle injuries throughout the year, then yes, I agree. He's done a phenomenal job and he deserves credit and they may extend again. But I just don't think that's happening. I think that's just pie in the sky nonsense. I don't think that's anything likely to happen.
Round one's a very good start for them, and it's, as you said, a step in the right direction and a really important win against a pretty good team as well, can I just say?
Well, against a team we thought was good, but everyone now is saying that they're not. So how much do you take out of it? Look, I'm interested to see how they go over the next month. I think, as you said, a bit of a danger game against North Melbourne, given we don't really know too much about North at the moment. I think they're going to be better than what they were last year. And as you said, the Freo injury. So that's a bit of an interesting game. And then three tough ones with the Crows, Blues and Power.
I don't think round one proves that extending him for 1 year was the right decision, but I do like the fact that they came to that choice.
Fair enough. Last question of the show. Sydney play Essendon this weekend. Sydney, gee, they look good, don't they? Who is the one swan that the Bombers will need to shut down if there are any chance of winning on Saturday night?
I think it's clearly Isaac Heaney. He's not necessarily... Well, he potentially is the best player. I think he's clearly the match winner on that
side.
Leaving
Brownlow
right?
after 2 weeks.
He probably will be, but 26 touches, one goal, 13 clearances against Melbourne, 29 touches, 7 marks, 2 goals against Collingwood. He's the match winner and he's the one they've got to stop. If he gets off the chain again on Saturday night, there's no way Essendon are winning this game. He's the one they've got to stop. I don't know how they're going to do it. Does Setterfield or Caldwell play a defensive role on him? I would have thought when he goes forward that Mason Redmond would be a good matchup for him because he's decent in the air and on the ground as well and he's quite versatile, but he's not going to be there this week due to that suspension. So I'm not sure they've got the right matchup for him. I don't think they can stop him, but he's definitely the one they got to stop.
Gee, you've done a bit of a whip round from your Brody Grundy take. You were saying he's their most important player.
Most important player, but not the match winner.
So do they don't need to stop him? They can let Grundy do what he wants? What's the deal there?
Well, you said one player, and I gave you one player, Isaac Heaney. Okay. I didn't say that Brody Grundy is not an important player. And stopping him...
He can't be that important.
Stopping him and nullifying that midfield is going to go a long way to them winning this game. I just think on Saturday night, Isaac Heaney is going to be more of a problem.
I agree. I think Heaney's start to the year has been phenomenal. It's only 2 games, but gee, he's been amazing. As I said, he probably has 6 Brownlow votes, certainly 5 through the two games. And what he's doing in the midfield is something that we've seen glimpses at times here and there, but I think with the injuries, it's forced him to play in there and he's just excelling. I guess the real question is, what's going to happen when Luke Parker and Callum Mills and Taylor Adams are fit and come back in, and what do they do with Heaney? Because I think he's proving right now to be maybe their best midfield option. So it's hard to then say, all right, you can go back and sit in the forward pocket. So, I don't know. It's interesting to see how that'll work. Maybe it's Mills that will play off half-back, or Parker maybe at half-forward.
Yep.
I've seen him do that at various stages. And you still obviously got Chad Warner, who was sensational last week as well. And then Errol Goulden on a wing. So, they've got plenty of depth in that midfield now, all of a sudden, the Swans. I think it is Heaney. As I said, Warner was great last week. I think he's another one that you won't want to let him get loose. He was able to just take some marks inside 50, get loose quite a few times. But the other player is Logan McDonald. I mean, not a match winner, but I tell you what, Darcy Moore could have done a better job manning him up.
A lot of goals from the goal square, Logan McDonald.
Just no one near him.
Yeah.
So he's not going to be the match winner, but I tell you what, they'll want to do a better job defensively on him than the Pies did last week. Can't allow him to just be sitting in the goal square getting ones over the top.
Making sure they don't get easy avenues to goal will actually be important. You are right there, guys. That's all we have time for this week's episode of Red Time. We'll be back next week to preview round 3 and look at more hot topics in the game. Until then, enjoy the footy. I'll speak to you then.
Thanks for joining us on the ESPN Footy Pod. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.